This is Liz Lavender talking to herself. My first recollection of No Fit State was when they were in Royal Victoria Park in Bath. I lived in Bath at the time. I'd been involved with circuses previously, with Circus Burlesque. I'd made costumes for them way back, 1987 or something like that. A couple of years I made costumes for them, and I remember feeling absolutely devastated when they went off on tour. It was like my arm had been torn away, and I thought there must be something better than living in Bradford-on-Avon whilst they were touring around. So in 89, I got offered a job working with Burlesque as the teacher. I was school teacher to a number of children, maybe eight, on tour. And I got together with my ex-partner, Chris Hills, at that time. And at about the same time that Burlesque folded, a little offshoot sort of sprang up, which toured for 1 year, Circus Absurdicus. That only lasted a year. It ended quite catastrophically on the French-Italian border at a service station, with people throwing the toys out the pram and unhitching caravans and driving off. And after that, I had my youngest son, Charlie, and Chris, my ex-partner, as I say, went to work for No Fit State. That would have been 89 was when I worked for Burlesque. 1991 must have been Absurdicus, so it must have been 92 93. I think it was Dodo Island. I'd seen No Fit State before that. I'd been a rather naughty person. There was a few people I knew in No Fit State at that time, Linda and Gregoire, and Marion Kenny and Pete Lamb, who had worked with me on Burlesque. And I snuck in under the sidewalling to watch Defective Detective, which was quite good fun. I did feel a bit bad about sneaking under the sidewalling, and I can remember both Tim and Ali prowling the sidewalks of the tent to stop people doing this, but I was a little bit sneakier. I'm sorry, No Fit State, for not paying for my ticket that first time, but I think I've put in since more than enough to cover the cost of that ticket. Moving on, what jobs did I do with No Fit State? I did all manner of things with No Fit State. I have done a range of things, from accompanying my boyfriend and hanging out and cooking the odd meal and helping out where needs be. And finally, I've ended up doing this project with lots in between. But one of the things I did, I would like to talk this project about, is merchandising, because one of the things that I did quite regularly over the years, I was the person who used to try and make some money at every stand. I used to do the merchandising and later the bar. And I want to talk to you about the merchandising. It was a very simple operation. And I think I first got into cooking for the circus because I was cooking with my windows open in the truck and the smells were drifting over. It was wet. I had two young under fives and my baby. Well, Ilo would have been seven, actually. And I was a mum and I cooked dinner. And I could see all these faces as they were putting up sidewallings in the wet, and I felt really bad that Chris was coming home to a nice pasta meal. So merchandising and cooking, the heart of the circus, one creating money, one feeding the masses and nurturing them and putting plasters on their broken hearts. So that's how the cooking started. Smells drifting out of my truck. I can remember what it was I was cooking. I was cooking a really nice pasta sauce with lots of olives in it. And the smell and the pesto was drifting out. So I ended up doing meals, company meals, on tent up and tent down days. on that tour. And it was nice. It made me feel like I was doing something. Back in those days, merchandising was a very simple operation. It consisted of, as people arrived, I think there was a trestle table set up with a few bags of crisps and Mars bars on it. But importantly, in the beginning, the first sales pitch was the red velvet-covered cushions. The seating in the tent came from Burlesque. It was planks of wood, sometimes with splinters. It wasn't particularly comfortable for a two-hour show. And so we used to try and sell these little rectangular red cushions, or rent them to people for the duration of the show for a quid. I think our sales pitch, especially with the older people, was it helped prevent piles. And we had a marginal success in raising cash with that venture. Then came the interval where I think maybe we had cans and crisps and some sweets from the back of the tent. I think we also perhaps did tea and coffee. And then at the end of the tent, the kids, people were encouraged to buy a poster, and there was always that line, remember kids, if your mum and dad don't buy you one, they don't love you. So people used to buy posters. I can't remember how much they were. They were probably 50p or a quid as well. And I also think we sold T-shirts, but that was mainly to friends. So that was the full extent of the merchandising operation. Oh, I forget, programmes. We did have some programmes for sale for each show. Although Toby and I have discovered doing this project, don't think we had a programme for one of the shows, Treasure Island. We didn't have a programme for Treasure. We did. For one of them, we didn't. That was the Blue Tent years. Very, very little sales, really. I used to go off to the cash and carry with whatever we'd earned from the previous stand, minus the travel money for everybody to get there. The petrol money got taken out, and, of course, the breakdown money. And I went to the cash and carry when we got to the next site with whatever was left. Sometimes that wasn't much. Sometimes we dug into our own pocket. Sometimes I had to go back to that cash and carry nearly every day because we just did not have enough money to buy stock for the whole week that we were there. We never bought individually wrapped sweets because of all the wrappers on the floor under seat we had to pick up afterwards. And we never bought chewy, sticky things that little brats could stick to the seats. We really tried not to buy things like Coke and Pepsi as well. I have been all my life a big Coca-Cola loather, and I used to loathe buying Coca-Cola to drink or for sale. But obviously up in Scotland, we used to have trays and trays and trays of Earnbrew for sale. One of the tours... Well, after that, I tried to diversify a bit, and I tried to sell things that were in some way connected with the show. So the first enterprise, as far as that was concerned, was the Alice show, I think. And for the Alice show, I used to run off to one of the cheap supermarkets, Netto, if I was in London, where you could buy 6 jam tarts for about 30p. And I would arrange these pretty on a plate, and at the beginning of the Alice show, I would go around up and down the streets selling tarts. Buy your tarts. And they flew off the shelves. We used to sell a lot of tarts. So that was my first little kind of creative venture. After that, Treasure Island, I got hold of a rather revolting brown brewing barrel. And into it, I used to pour the cheapest, most revolting drinks I could buy. Really, it was cheap. It was least expense, maximum profit. And we used to call it grog. It could have been made up with last week's urn brew, with a bit of cherryade and cream soda, whatever was on cheap, orangeade, own brand stuff, own brand basic stuff. We used to pour in this barrel, and dressed as pirates, me and my colleague Julie Bosworth, who used to help me with this, we used to go around and sell cups of this grog. I think think we mainly made the parents feel a bit awkward if they didn't buy the kids this grog. We didn't price it too expensively because women with lots of kids would buy every kid a cup of grog. So that used to make a lot of money. I hope it didn't poison anybody. I wouldn't have drunk it myself and I wouldn't have given it to the kids. So it was a bit naughty of me. But that was Treasure Island. Moving on. Where did we go next? I can't remember what I told next. But things really did step up a bit in the Silver Tent years. And particularly at the community shows. So the community shows, I was tasked with running the bar. These were big shows that had a lot of people, even 100 people odd performing, and many, many more you came to see these shows. And it was the first experience I'd had, really, of running something like that. It was always botched together at the very last minute. Obviously, show comes first. Obviously, pre-show comes first. Bar always came last. We were still painting the bar as the doors were opening sometimes. So the first bar I did, in that respect, for a community show, was for Prophecy. And I've still got the big red sign now, big red bit of hardboard, bit bent now, not particularly a good shape. And I think it was Della that wrote the bar name, which was The Dispensary. So it had this kind of chemical lab kind of feel to it. And I think we had sort of weird demijohns. I went out with 50p to go and buy artifacts to decorate the bar with on Clifton Street. And came up with some rather strange things. I think the whole tent was dressed in this white fabric, really thin white fabric, that Sean had got for Tuppence Halfpenny for 10 tons. And so everything was covered in this kind of nylon-y, stretchy white fabric. Well, of course, we're in a warehouse. We're not the cleanest of people anyway. We're serving drinks to drunkards. Every night, these drinks, these white pieces of fabric were black or grey or brown, beer stains, fag stained bits of fabric. So we had to pull those off every single morning and replace them. And even though there was masses and masses of this white stuff to start with, because it was used so much and had to be replaced so much, we kind of ran out in the end. And I had this little crew of people, Fiona Carmichael, Sean and Della, Tom Wiersma, who else used to be in my bar? Stevie Kennedy came and helped do the bar. Riley was behind my bar. Riley was brilliant. And of course, the one person who I relied on for all of this was Russell Noman. Russell Noman used to have the Tredegar pub on the top of Clifton Street on the corner. And No Fit State offices were above the Tred. The Tred was let's say, a little ropey. There were all manner of fights and scuffles, and it wasn't the place where you take your mum for Sunday dinner, put it that way. It was and the offices above the Tred were big and cold and no central heating and no double glazing and minging, to be honest, minging they were. But without Russell, I wouldn't have been able to do it. He lent me a load of bar stuff, he got the license, and we became really good close pals doing these bars. And he would come and keep an eye because the license was in his name, and I would be there doing it. And he taught me a lot about running a bar. I'd only worked in a bar really before, so in terms of how to run them operationally, that was my first little excursion. We still had the lockup. I think we used to keep all the alcohol in the lockup, which was down the back of Partridge Street or by the Yellow Kangaroo. And there is a funny tale to tell about stocking. I think it was the second bar that we did for Now Here. Can't remember what that one was called. Maybe we call that one The Dispensary as well.